Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast 2022 episode 1. I'm Dan Tomlinson and I'm joined as always by Rich Harrison, aka Pommy Rich. How are you doing, Paul?
Yeah, very well, mate. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you as well. And come on, you all, as always. Looking forward to getting back at it and seeing what another new year will bring to us. Obviously, that started for us yesterday in the UK at Bradford. It was a horrible flashback, if you like. I mean, Oddsall, start right there. Yeah. What an absolute dump.
Yes. When they were successful, all the money went on the pitch, didn't it? And I mean, it went into the playing squad. It didn't go on the, you know, they didn't put any money back into the ground or the playing surface or anything. And now they're not successful. You can see, you know, it's Oddsall's not been fit for purpose for 20 years.
Yeah, so, yeah, true.
Playing second division football on it is, pretty nasty.
It was kind of sad to see, really. I mean, it's not like I'm just taking the piss out of them. It was sort of, you know, it's my dad. We got there and thought, this is sad. Because, you know, I remember going at the turn of millennium and there was, you know, 16, 17, even 18, up to 20,000 people there. And they had fireworks, they had the flame, you know, the flamethrowers and pyrotechnics and everything. And the place was absolutely bouncing. But, yeah, it looked like a building site. And actually was a building site right in front of us at the edge of the pitch. And there was a massive hole there. I said, if you dive in that hole, you'll be halfway to the centre of the earth. Because I think Oddsall is in the centre of the earth anyway, isn't it? I mean, it's that far buried in the ground.
There's a claim. Where there's blame, there's a claim.
Absolutely.
You'd be jumping down that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but it was a throwback that I don't really want to see again in the near future. But yeah, as for the game, it was probably what we expected. You know, Bradford were a much more experienced than Hull FC. They had some, you know, decent players in that team, and obviously Hull only had four players above the age of 21. There was only two that you would consider first team players in Ligi Sal and Brad Fash. And you know, the young lads they gave a good account of themselves. For, you know, for many of those boys, it was their first ever experience at this level, you know, that they're used to playing against fellow teenagers in an academy league. So, you know, from that point, fair play. And again, you know, one or two names did stand out.
Yeah, from what I've read, obviously, because I wasn't there and I didn't see it, from what I read, Dave did very well, as did young Callum Rutland in the halves as well. Obviously, Fash led by example, but you'd always get that from Fash. I'd be interested to see how Jordan Johnston went. What did you think of Johnston? Was he any good hooker, or
just the Jordan Johnston performance? You know, it was full of endeavour. You know, you can never say that he does. He didn't go into a field and not try. He does. He's full of effort. I just look at my nine, and you want that ball zipping from the ruck, don't you? You want that ball absolutely being nailed time and time again to the first receiver, and I just don't think you get that with Johnston, unfortunately. I just don't think he's quick enough.
Well, this was his chance, wasn't it? This was his chance to really put a marker down, given that he's the first nine to play for Hull this year. This was his chance to kind of prove a few of the doubters wrong, especially against the second division opposition. So, yeah, I would have thought that Hodgson would be looking for a big performance from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is that, and we will come on to this when we talk about annual signings and that, but if Lovajua comes and hits the ground running, then he's got to be the nine this year. I don't think Johnson's going to get a look in, unfortunately. Cam Scott was quiet too, but he hardly got any ball, to be fair to him. A lot of what Hull did came down the left edge. But yeah, Callum Rutland was very good. He definitely impressed me. Half back, he had number six on his back. You know, two tries, you know, backing up a break from Brad Fash, who, like you say, was very good. But I would expect that. You know, Brad Fash has played over 100 games for Hull FC now. Not to take any credit away from his performance, but because you still got to turn out and deliver. But yeah, it was very good, Fash. He was busy. His work rate's outstanding. That's one thing you can never doubt from him. He'll always take the ball up and he'll always put in, you know, every ounce of effort into every game, and you can only appreciate that, and that's what I want to see, and we can respect that as fans. I was happy with what I saw, to be honest. It was just a pre-season game. You just want to get through them with a clean bill of health, don't you? And that's all that matters, and I think Hull did that. I don't think there was any concerns apart from Jamie Shaw rolling his ankle in the team run the day before, which is just, you know, County Road strikes again. But, you know, I think...
Yeah.
All in all, I'm pretty content with that. Some good youngsters coming through. Obviously, it goes with what we voiced last year about what the club are doing. You know, with obviously the Rising Stars programmes, the college programmes, the academy programmes. You know, they put the time and effort into that. And, you know, over the next few years, we've got to see some reward from that. We need to bring through players that are not just in the first team on the fringes, but are the mainstays, are the cornerstones of that first team. And that's what's... I mean, look at St. Helens right now, and there's a point there. Tim, who writes for Up the Cream, made out in his last piece, and so I think St. Helens is starting 13. There's about 9 or 10 of them that are, you know, born and bred from their academy. Yeah. And these are people like Johnny Lomax. These are people like, you know, Matty Lee. That's, you know, what we want to aspire to. We want to get a side that is, you know, made and crafted through our academy. And it means we can spend big on the areas we need. We can bring in absolute top quality imports that are the very best in Sub League. I think that's the method and the way to go, and hopefully one day we'll get there.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right, the way to do it is by getting the pathways right, isn't it? Because it's just, it's an easy way to do it, and it's a cheap way to do it. When you're developing your own players, you're not having to, you know, you're not having to dangle that carrot of you know, come to Hull and we'll get you a house and we'll do this and we'll give you a company car and we'll do this and we'll do this and we'll do this, because it's cheaper to get guys up from their own area, you know, and people that live, breathe and bleed Hull, you know, and it's no coincidence that when we've had times of, you know, of good success, we've had plenty of local team, you know, and that's always been a bit of a mainstay of Hull sides down the year, that you've always had that core of Hull-born players, or you know, or at least players that have come through the ranks together, even if they might have started at Featherstone or Leeds or whatever. They've been in the system since they were 17, 18, like a Tom Briscoe or someone like that. You know, it's good in a lot of ways, but it makes good financial sense as well to do that. And that means that, you know, you've got a little bit extra that you can go out and instead of buying a Farima or a Fanua, you're going out and you're really pushing the envelope, and you're looking at buying a top class halfback, or you're looking at buying a top class hooker, or you're looking at buying a top class fullback or whatever from the NRL because you can afford to.
You look at the comparison right now, then, and again, that's not to slight him because I don't even know the bloke, but we've signed Joe Lovajua, who hasn't made an NRL appearance.
Yep.
Who I presume is much cheaper than who St Helens have signed, which is Joey Lizard, who we know is a very good Super League player from his days at Salford. Yep.
But I tell you what, Lovadoo is not going to let you down. Me and you have always had that laugh about some of the people that have come over, and, you know, the Twitter police are out before you start, aren't they? You know, Carlos Tuimavave. Who the hell's Carlos Tuimavave? I remember it. I remember it really plainly. And I was lucky because I'd seen him play a couple of times, including, actually, he played a friendly for Newcastle up here, where they played two of the local teams, like 40 minutes each. You know, one of the teams played the first half, the other team played the second half. And he played fullback in that game, and he was unbelievable. And when Hull signed him a couple of years later, I thought, oh, that's that bloke I saw. And then I kind of did a bit of research, and, you know, you saw him playing. He played a few first-grade games, but more often than not, you saw him playing in the New South Wales Cup. And he was actually a good player, and look at how he's come on. You know, all he needed was a good concerted run in someone's first team to really show who he was. You know, you got to remember, we signed him as a utility back. He's now a specialist centre. We signed him as probably a fullback. He played at six at Wembley, and now he's our left centre, and he'll stay there probably, left centre, right centre, whatever. Lovadua falls absolutely squarely into that category. He's very highly thought of, but wasn't likely to get a run in the first team at Souths when Souths have got, you know, one of the best hookers in the comp. So, you know, he'd been at St George before that and couldn't crack into the team, in the same way that Carlos Tuimavave had been at the New Zealand Warriors and couldn't crack their first team. Mate, he is the right player at the right time. Yes, he's a hooker, but he can also play a bit of loose forward. He could probably even deputise the wing or the centres because he's quick. Mate, we've got a good one. I honestly do. I think we've got a really good one. I just think I haven't seen much of him, but what I've seen of him playing for Fiji and playing in the New South Wales Cup, mate, he only knows one way, and that's forward. He's a very good defender. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He doesn't lose his cool. I reckon we've got a half-decent one.
Yeah, well, let's hope it pans out like that. As I say, I mean, over here, we're all thinking, well, yeah, it was this guy. But then a lot of people said that about Chris Satay. You know, was he? Barely could get a look in at New Zealand Warriors, and he's come over here and he's now one of the best props in Super League. So,
yeah, player of the year last year by a mile.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, along with Jake Connor, who's, well, let's say, his very best. And there was a gulf, wasn't there? There was them two. And then maybe your Carlos's and your Josh Griffin before his injury. But, yeah, there was a big gulf after that. And, yeah, he was absolutely immense. As I say, one of the best props to the league. I have no doubt in saying that at all. just to finish off on Bradford, as I say, the physical disadvantages were clear to see, and they would be when, you know, like I say, you got such a young side, and Bradford were much fresher than Hull because they had 27 players that played, whereas Hull had 18, so they rotated their interchange a lot more frequently than Hull did, and obviously that tells. And I actually like that, though, from an Hull point of view, because when you get pre-season games and you're playing 24, 25 players, and you're just rotating so much, and you end up losing your way a little bit. And I think with a normal match day, what would be a competitive match day squad, it was obviously plus one. It was just a bit better. It just flowed better. And I thought, they were young kids and they gave it a go, and that's all you can ask, and they'll benefit from that experience and hopefully take it into the reserves and or academy, and you know, and obviously continue their development. But yeah, I was content with what I saw.
Yeah, and they weren't disgraced.
No, exactly.
You know, it was fairly close. How did Wakoki Koki go on the wing?
is that how we're pronouncing it?
Is it Wakoki Koki?
We haven't got a clue. I haven't got a clue, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce it. Say it was just a young kid on the wing, wasn't he? He made one error from a hard bomb. He ended up getting rumbled past the dead bar line, but
you know, as I say, his left leg in, his left leg out,
yeah,
his left leg
yeah,
in, just, shook it all about.
It was a tough but rewarding day, I think, for some of those youngsters. Yeah. So, like I say, some of them came out looking very good, and as I say, you mentioned Davy Litton, obviously the club have talked him up, giving him a 3-year full time deal. You know, he had some moments where you think, there's a fairly decent fullback here. He's got a lot of pace. He saw that in the second half. He made one break, and yeah, he looked pretty quick. I'd like to see him on a dry pitch, you know, in open space. But yeah, that's all you want from friendlies, isn't it? Clean bill of health, get through it, get your experience for your young lads, and obviously a more senior squad will go to Leeds in a fortnight's time, and we'll get a better measure of where we are. But again, the cliche is it's a friendly. You know, they do not matter. What happens is what we do at Wakefield at round one. Or scrap that. What happens is what we do in round 20 when it comes to August, and we usually go off the rails by then. So yeah, that's when it matters. But yeah, I'm content with what I saw. So yeah, and big news in the off season then, which blew us all by surprise. I mean, was the departure of Mark Snead to Salford, and it still feels weird saying that right now, actually, and especially when Salford have, you know, did their launch videos and some of the media stuff, and you see Mark Snead back in red and thinking, that doesn't really look right. It's weird. And then you think Luke Gale's his replacement. It's like, wow, I can think of all the radio shows I've done, all the podcasts over the years where I've praised Mark Snead
and bagged
Luke Gale, yeah. And now he's in LFC colours, so... What did make me laugh is one of blokes I follow on Twitter said, oh yeah, everyone quit now, you know, with a keyboard gif on Twitter saying, no, delete your tweets now about Luke Gale. And I was thinking, yeah, I'm one of them, mate, because I've given him some stick over the years, and especially when he played for England in 2017 in the World Cup. But,
yes,
you know, he's a whole FC player now, and he gets a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, to be honest, but the way that it looks from the outside is that we've actually done some pretty astute piece of business. Snead wasn't going to be offered a contract next year, by the looks of it. He was always going to go to Salford next year, by the looks of it. And Salford have then said to Hull, we'll take him off your hands this year. At that point, Hull have gone out and gone, right, who else is there available? And obviously, Gale's name's come up. They've contacted Leeds. Leeds have said, yeah, surplus to requirements here. We've said to Luke Gale, if you can come over, we'll get rid of Snead. Gale's gone, yes. We've said to Snead, OK, you can go to Salford. Look, to be honest, Snead was out of form and he was looking stale and he wasn't getting challenged enough in our system. And for him to go back to a team that are going to be likely fighting relegation, he'll think that he can probably keep them up single-handedly. It's probably about... It's a horrible thing to say, but it's probably about the level that he's at this stage in his career, at the level of form he's been in for a year and a half. You can say what you like about Luke Gale, but Luke Gale has consistently been in a team that's finished top five. And he gets the left edge of attack absolutely singing everywhere he goes. Now, if he can stay fit, and we've only got him for a year, I don't think it's a bad piece of business. I mean, the caveat to all of this is that it looks very much like Hull are making a play for a halfback for next year, and that's not going to be Luke Gale. We might keep him on as a bit part player, but he's not going to be our first choice number seven 2023, I wouldn't say.
I think that's fair to say right now. Obviously, there may be an eye on the future. Obviously, there's been rumours, I think you can call it rumours, that we're looking at Jake Truman for 2023 and beyond. You don't know who's going to pop up elsewhere. On both sides of the globe as well, may I add there. So, and who's to say that Luke Gayle's going to defy everyone? He's going to be fit as a fiddle. He's going to be injury-free. Absolutely. Maybe thinking, you know what, boys, I can do another year. You know, if the right player's not available. You know, if the target that Hull wants not quite ready, or maybe it's 2024, and he's still larking around thinking, yeah, I can go another year, then that's how it's going to pan out. It's going to work for the club as well as the player, isn't it? And this is the one thing I reiterate. The club is the most important thing, and it always has to be. And this is where I did get a little bit emotional when Matt Snead left, I'm not going to lie, but, you know, and we loved what he did at the club. He did some absolutely phenomenal things at Hull FC. But he's not bigger than Hull FC. Hull FC is the main love here, and that love will never die. It's the club that comes first always. And yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens in the Gayle situation and see how it turns out. And like we say, if he plays, you know, 2/3 to 3/4 of the games, then that's probably a box tick, because it is linked up with Jake Connor on paper at least, and in theory, and you know, in principle and everything else. It looks really exciting.
And from what I've read, it was Connor was a big part of... Connor was saying, get him. I can play with him. I really want to play with him, you know? So that was a big part of it, apparently. I mean, the other thing is, mate, you look at, you know, the back end of last season, after we kind of fell apart in July, we did a couple of podcasts where, you know, we said, keep or bin, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of marry, snog, avoid kind of thing that we did with the players. And by the end of that, I think me and you both came to a kind of consensus. There was a couple of players we disagreed on, but we came to a consensus was that we needed to move on for Nua, but we didn't think we could because he was under contract. We managed to wrangle it. We paid him off. He's gone. We said that Snead needed something, whether it was a change of scenery or whether it was a kick up the arse or whatever. We weren't firing an attack with Snead pulling the strings. Snead's gone. We said we needed a big, rough-ass prop. We've got one now in Cairn Evans. We said we needed a backup hooker that could actually challenge Houghton and actually spell him, possibly. We've got one in Lovadua. You know? We'd already signed McIntosh. We've got Swift on the other wing. This has been a complete rebrand of Hull's backline, which was big, tough, metre-making wingers that couldn't beat me in a foot race, to two quick, speedy, elusive finishers, which is what we've got now. This has been a complete rebrand of our backline, and a new halfback, and a hairy ass prop that's going to frighten people, and a dynamic young hooker that's going to put the fear of God in our incumbent hooker and make him look over his shoulders. Mate, as pieces of business go, I don't think we could have done much better, and you've got to take it out of town for that.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they've done a lot more, the club have done a lot more this winter than I thought they'd do. If I thought we'd have a changing half-back, you know, a new hooker brought in, a prop, I just didn't see it coming, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
They've shown a lot more balls than I thought they had. I mean, let's not forget they let Mahir Fanua go as well, and that took some balls, you know, trying to find him a new club and obviously rip up that contract when it's still got a year to go. I mean, it was the right decision. You know, no one will forget what Mahir Fanua did in those two cup-winning years, and he'll always be respected and welcomed back, you know, as a spectator for that. But at the end of the day, you can't see the importance of it. The club that comes first, you can't hang on to players just because of previous endeavour or past achievement. Or you've got to be ruthless. And this is why St Helens and Wigan are successful. This is why Melbourne are successful, obviously in your neck of the woods, because they are ruthless. They are absolutely ruthless, and they put themselves first. And we've got to start doing that. And this winter we have, and I'm very content with the business we've done, absolutely. Your winger point is the absolute nail on the head. If we make breaks this year on the flanks, not many people are stopping Adam Swift and Daniel McIntosh when they're fit and firing. Good luck catching them boys, because they are two flyers. We've got two flying centres as well. Imagine Carlos Tumavari and Josh Griffin making breaks with them two running off them. It's a match made in heaven. We've got pace on the flanks. We've got a fullback who can create. We've got an halfback who's going to engage the line and really test that defence. And we've got, you know, another
when
big...
When was the last time we signed the current Great Britain halfback?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean...
Do you know?
Yeah, a lot of people disagree with it, but it's a fact, isn't it? Luke Gayle is an England/Great Britain halfback.
Yeah.
Simple as that. I mean, and he's fighting... This is another thing. He's fighting for that place to obviously play in the World Cup, whether it happens, if Australia can be asked at the end of the year. He's fighting to keep his seventh place in that England squad. That can only be good for us, can't it? And again, this is why I look at Josh Griffin coming back. I mean, I have no doubt he's going to pick up where he left off because that's the type of player he is. But he'll be looking at Super League now thinking, right, I was nailed on for that World Cup. Then I did my Achilles, sod's law. But I'm going to get that place back now. I'm going to earn it back and I'm going to be in that squad. And again, that's only good for FC. Jake Connor's looking at thinking, I got omitted from the squad last year. I wanted to play against France. Right, I'm going to prove Sean Wayne wrong. I'm going to develop the other sides of my game. I'm going to absolutely rip up the attack again. I'm going to leave him no option but to pick me in that squad.
Yeah.
Again, that's only good for LFC. So I look at it and thinking, if you're a player right now and you say you've got a point to prove, I mean, a lot of those players have got a point to prove anyway, but there's extra incentives on an international point of view to get the very best for, you know, for LFC as well, from, you know, a selfish point of view here, and it can only be good for us. And yeah, I am looking forward to it. I mean, Luke Gayle, it's fresh, it's definitely a new direction, and it's undoubtedly what we needed because, you know, barring flashing the pans in here and there, we've been absolutely awful for 2-3 seasons now. And look at even 2019, we had some outstanding moments, don't get me wrong. I mean, but you're thinking, hang on, those moments were drop goal wins in games that we dominated. Thinking, Wigan away, we were comfortable, and then somehow we needed a bloody golden point drop goal to win the game. And thinking, the same happened in Catalans, and it was very rare where we actually, you know, took a side to the cleaners. I'm thinking it happened again. The Catalans, the second time we went in 2019, it happened when we played them in the Cup as well, and obviously we beat Rovers by a record score. But, you know, it wasn't very often where we won a game and it was comfortable and it was never in doubt. And yeah, I'm glad we've freshened things up a little bit. I think Sneed is a victim, obviously, of that spine underperforming, but it's the right decision. And I say others are still very fortunate to be in their positions. I mean, I'll say it right now, Danny Outland has got to step up this year. I'm not interested in making 60 tackles a game. I don't want that. I'd rather him have 2 try assists. I want to make him try contributions with the ball. I don't 60 tackles, 70 tackles, yeah, nice. It looks good on paper. It appeases some of the idiots on social media. But it's like when he made the record 85-86 against Wire earlier last year, whenever it was. I didn't even know. At the time, nobody knew at the time. No one singled him out saying, oh, wow, he's made 85 tackles. What a performance. Yeah, it was a typical Danny Outland performance. It was full of effort and endeavour. We all knew that, but we didn't know the numbers that were behind it. But what I did remember was Darrell Clark laying a try on for Chris Hill to tie the game up midway through the second half. I remembered that. That's what I want from my hooker. I'd rather he scoots out the ruck, catches an air marker, you know, being lazy or a you know, and putting someone over. I'd much rather have that, and that's what I want to see, you know, this year.
It comes into that great British tradition of the heroic loser, doesn't it?
Yeah, you absolutely.
Know, your Frank Brunos and your Tim Henman and people like that. Oh, you know, we didn't win, but God, how brave were they? You know, and all the rest of it. And it comes into that, and that, you know, Tackle 52 as a brand will go down in history as a phenomenal effort because he did that and still had an attacking say in that game. And not only, you know, did he do the 52, I think it was 55 or 57 tackles by the end of the game because he made another 3 or 4. But he was still scooting from dummy half, and he was still doing his absolute, probably that's when he was at his absolute best, from the base of the ruck, distributing left and right. But I think what's actually happened as a result of Tackle 52 is that somewhere it's been conflated that more tackles equals good, and it's not. It's not. Yeah, it's great that he's solid and he misses hardly any tackles and he's very solid down the middle and all the rest of it. But that's not what a hooker's job is these days. That's what a hooker's job was in the early 80s. You know, it's not your job anymore. You know, this is comparing apples and oranges, but look at Cam Smith when Cam Smith was at the Storm. He used to play in a dinner jacket. You know, he'd be there and he'd be from out in half, he'd be distributing left and right, but he wouldn't make 50 tackles. He wouldn't make 30 tackles in a match. Yeah, he wouldn't make a break. But I tell you what, they were a better team with him on the pitch because he was that kind of player. But I saw him play a couple of times. They put him in the halves, and he was completely lost. He was an out and out hooker, you know. But you don't have to make 60 tackles a match to be a hooker. You don't. And for some reason, it just seems to be that's the way we've expected it to go. And I think I've said a couple of times on this podcast, he reminds me of a Salford player from the 90s and early 2000s called Malcolm Alka, who just basically tackled himself into retirement. You know, he was 60 tackles a match, every match.
Yeah.
And he got to the point where, you know, he was finished. He was done because he just his motor had gone. And the one thing you can say about Houghton is he's got a fantastic engine. But he's, what, 33 now? It's not going to last forever.
No, exactly. And nail on the head with Malcolm Alka, and that's what Houghton now reminds you of. And yeah, I think the word we're looking for here are the Fs, flair, finesse. Yeah, it's nice having effort and endeavour, but effort and endeavour doesn't put bums on seats, unfortunately. And when I've heard some rumours recently that all's memberships are knocking around 3,500 right now, and we're only a month away from the season starting. That's worrying. That's not worrying. That's absolutely alarming, if that's true. I don't know how true that is. It's you take what you hear in this city with a pinch of salt 9 times out of 10. But yeah, it's concerning, and this is what I mean. All in 2022, we have got to get our brand of rugby and our identity sorted. We've got to be an entertaining side to watch again. I don't want to be sat at home in the East Stand bored out my skull watching all, because that's what happened at the end of last year. That the Wigan game was horrific. It cost 10-0.
Yes.
And it was the worst game of rugby I think I've ever seen. It was, I mean, even Wigan was absolutely dreadful. They were awful, but they were still better than Hull. Managed to get 2 tries in the second half. I mean, 0-0 at half time, and some people are thinking, oh yeah, this is glorious. It's like a throwback to the 60s or the 70s. No, it was horrendous. It wasn't like it was last ditch, world class defence. No, it was just two sides who didn't have
two teams that didn't want to score.
Yeah, didn't have a clue what to do. Didn't able to score.
To
yeah.
To the point you made about how he's got to improve this year. You look at the other teams in the Super League. You can look at nearly every team and go, they've done fairly good business. You know, from start to finish, every team really, they look like they've improved. Even when they've taken players from other teams that didn't want them, you can see why they'd want them. You know, Castleford taking Farimo and Fanua, and also taking Westerman and Kenny Edwards. You know, they've got some Mama from Warrington Wolves as well. They've got some big units now in the backs and in the second row. So you look at that and you think to yourself, well, you know, that's just basically a team in Radford's image, isn't it? That's a typical Radford team now. But you look at the players they've lost and you go, yeah, great. They've done really good business. Catalans have done good business. You know, Maloney was, you know, a really good player for them. But, you know, if you gave me Maloney or Mitchell Pearce, I'd take Mitchell Pearce every time. I really would. And Napa's a really good forward as well. They've done some really good business. Everyone's done good business. We've done good business. But you look at every other team, you know, there's real class going into Super League and class moving around from club to club. And it looks like the players that have moved from club to club will be a better fit for the club that they've rocked up in. Conrad Hurrell, I saw a photograph of him 2 days ago. He looks slim. He looks engaged. He'll be an absolute revelation at St. Helens next year. Totally wasted at Leeds. And Saints have signed Curtis Sirinen, Will Hoppawati, Joey Lussick.
What does that say about the club? What does that say about Leeds? And then what does that say about St. Helens?
Yeah, if you go to St. Helens, you're expected to give the absolute best of yourself. And Hurrell got away with doing bugger all at Leeds for 2 years. And he really did do bugger all. Okay, you know, like we've had players where you go, oh, you know, outside of the club, he's not, you know, people outside of Hull don't really appreciate Carlos Tuomavaava the way we do, right? He's a bit of a folk hero. But how the hell was Conrad Hurrell the folk hero for Leeds Rhinos supporters? What did he do? I can't remember a game where he actually did anything.
Dance around, do a few dubs, signal to the crowd.
Well, that's a clown. Buy a rodeo clown. Put him in the rhino outfit. You know? You're not paying him good money to piss around like that.
I agree, absolutely. But
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It is a weird one. And when you all saw the polls and you got Conrad Hurrell in the top five of Super League centres, I'm thinking, if I'm in the top five Super League centres in West Yorkshire, never mind Super League. And baffling. Really is baffling.
Yeah.
Just a bit of gratitude towards Mark Snead. I mean, I get the decision. I completely agree with the decision. and the logistics behind it, it undoubtedly is the right move for the club. But this is a bloke, after all, that has been at this place for, 7 years? He went to Wembley a couple of times and, did some crazy things and won 2 Lance Todd trophies and pretty much won Hull 2 Challenge Cups. So, this is a bloke who reached immortality. Well, not only reached it, he went beyond it, didn't he? And he'll always be remembered, cherished, will always be thankful for what he did at this club, and that left boot will be, synonymous in LFC folklore. And, I can never thank him enough for what he did at Wembley when he turned the game round in 2016 with that 40-20. I mean, all walking down and out, thinking, here we go again. And then there's one swing of that left peg, and we're thinking, right, we've got a chance now. 6 plays later, he puts the kick up for whoever scores, does the same again for Jamie Shaw. And as I say, the rest is history. But then he goes and does it the next year. And, obviously, it wasn't everyone's cup of tea was Mark Snead. And, he wasn't an entertaining halfback by any stretch of the imagination. But that left boot was absolutely sensational. And,
general, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Led us around the park. And at his peak, he was phenomenal for Hull. And all we can say is thank you.
Yeah, as simple as that. I agree. And we're talking as fans of a club that flies people halfway around the world for a reunion of a team that lost at Wembley in 1985, right? So you can imagine, as the years go by, his legend will only grow for Hull.
Yeah, absolutely.
It will only grow, and that's a good thing. But I will counter that by saying, yes, he did do that at Wembley, but he didn't do it often enough to become a club great. Yeah, his goal kicking was phenomenal, and his drop goals and all the rest of it, absolutely unbelievable. And I mean, for one game that you can point to, that game in the south of France a couple of years ago, where we were 0.5% chance of winning that, and we managed to pull it out the fire thanks to him with his amazing kicking at the very death of that game, was just phenomenal. But it was the right time for him to move on.
I don't think many will disagree based on what they saw, because unfortunately Hull have been an absolute chore to watch, as we mentioned, for it's not just a little while, it's been a long time now, if we're being brutally honest. And also, me and you were both brutally honest last year, but you've got to call it how you see it. It's a fact, isn't it?
We were both calling for it last year. I remember you saying, dare I say it, we need a change in halfback.
Yeah.
You said it 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, well, I said it in the hooker as well. And, we've got a new hooker, but whether it'll be first choice to start with, I have my doubts on that. He'll have to come in and prove a point and show that he is actually the player to take us forward, and I really hope Joe does that. I mean, one player I did say get rid of, and this is one we disagreed on, was Scott Taylor. And it's interesting what's come out now this January. Obviously, he's hurt his foot again.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, injuries happen. It's a contact sport, but it's frustrating. It really is frustrating, because we haven't seen the best of Scott Taylor now since, I can't remember when.
2016, well, 16 or 17.
I'd argue 18, he was very good. I mean, he carried the pack in 2018. Let's forget, again, in 2018, we were very good for 2/3 of the year, and then it all fell away at the end.
Yeah, we were. Taylor was in his absolute pomp when he had a pack around him that were all singing off the same hymn sheet. We had Watts as an offsider, and then you had Green and Bowden coming on to spell them, and Green and Bowden are lesser players than Watts and Taylor. But when they were coming on against slightly tired defences, we could actually maintain that go forward, which was actually a really good ploy by Radford. And it got to the point with both of those, with Watts and Taylor, was that they'd come on and off more or less at the same time. We didn't spell one and then the other. They'd more or less come off at the same time. And it was really, really good to see that when they were both re-injected, probably around the 50th minute or whatever, we got an immense push, and we would always kick on. We always used to say, me and you could see us going through the gears.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was when we had go forward with two really good, robust props that were making metres. And I was really excited this year to see him fully fit, with a full pre-season behind him and alongside Kane Evans, who is a Watts-like player. And I honestly thought we might get the best out of him this year. But again, another foot injury, out for a couple of months at least. And out of contract at the end of this year, same as Houghton is.
End of next year with Scottsdale. Yeah, I thought it was this year as well. And we were talking about it yesterday, and I had to look it up, and it is the end of next year. And What I would question right now is, this is a reoccurrence of a foot injury for Scottsdale that's happened last season. And I am stealing our end-of-year podcast guest, Paul Cook's thunder here, because he wrote an absolutely nail-on-the-head piece in the Old Daily Mail. And
I read it.
Brilliant piece. He asked all the right questions, and I would be questioned, why the hell wasn't that sorted there and then? Why are we looking for the cheap option all the time? Why are we thinking, oh, we'll just get him through it, we can bring him back at the end of the year, he can play with injections, he can... No. This is a serious foot injury. We've just seen what it's done to Maihe Fanua. He's come back from West Tigers, and he wasn't the same player. And yeah, you can say it's attitude, whatever, but I would still bet that some of that is down to the foot injury he had while at a West Tigers player. So I'm thinking, you've seen it first hand what it does. We've seen what Achilles injuries do to players. We've seen what ACL injuries do to players. This is a serious foot injury. It's not like he's just broke his toe and he's out for 6 weeks. I mean, I broke my toe. It's nothing. I was playing football after 2 weeks. It don't matter.
Yeah.
This is a serious foot injury. What are we doing?
Yeah, a Lisfranc injury, it's horrible. It's basically, it's a break, but also a dislocation. And it's a dislocation like quite high up the foot. So it's not like you're dislocating your toe down at the bottom. You're dislocating your toe, the long bone that goes from the kind of knuckle that you can see right up into your ankle, towards your ankle. It's that bone there. It's a really horrible, horrible injury. I looked it up, actually, because I'm a bit of a geek like that. The injury is actually named after a French surgeon who noticed it in the French cavalrymen after the war of the Waterloo, because they were trying to pull the horses up really quick and it was dislocating their toes, because that's the unnatural movement, that kind of lateral movement of your foot when your foot's under immense pressure. And a lot of sportsmen get it if someone stood on the foot while they're moving, or if they've tried to twist in mud and they've got their foot stuck in mud or whatever. Lisfranc, it's a horrendous injury. It really is. It can finish players' careers.
And that's the stage we're getting to now, because I'm thinking Scott Taylor's just turned 30 years old. Mm. He has got a point to prove. Yes, he's won 3 Challenge Cups in his career, 2 at Hull. He's won the Super League with Wigan. Congratulations, years ago.
Mm.
In Wigan's case, that's nearly a decade ago. It's 9 years ago this year. That's irrelevant right now. You know, you've got to be thinking, right, okay, hang on, 30 years old as well. You're a prop forward. That's your prime. That's your absolute prime.
Yeah,
I just say I questioned the club, why the hell didn't they sort that out? But is this where you question the player as well? And you're thinking, do lifestyle choices come into it? You know, do they? Do off-field activities come into it? Or am I just being asked that? But we have to ask those questions, because why hasn't it been sorted last year? Why isn't that been put under the bed and it's dealt with and he's come back this year completely fresh? Why they've tried to harping on with that injury and, you know, just patch it up and put a square peg in around it. I just can't get my head around it, especially after watching what's happened to Fanua. And it's really disappointing, actually, because we need Scott Taylor fit and firing this year. When you look at it on paper, we've got 4 big props now in South, Satai, Kane Evans and Taylor himself. And and you look at we're going into round one with, you know, Satai's got a knock in pre-season. Taylor's obviously, you know, got a knock now. Well, I say knock, it's a bloody lengthy layoff by the looks of it. We've got Kane Evans who's suspended. We're going in with just Lucky Sal. And then Josh Bowden's injured. Sosa, who are we relying on for round one if Satai don't make it? You know, you're looking at Brad Fash will come in. He'll do us a job, and we'll appreciate that.
Yeah, but he's not a long-term.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking at... Well, exactly. He's not a Kane Evans, is he? I mean, just look at the two blokes, his physiques. But then you're looking at your Jack Browns. You're looking at Aidan Burrell to come in. And you're thinking, oh, for God's sake. Yeah. First home game's only St Helens at home. No dramas. And this is where I can get really cynical, because... Again, if I'm looking at 2022, one of the massive boxes we've got to tick this year is sorting our home form out, because it's absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, and getting off to a good start, Dan. We need to get off to a good start, because if we don't get off to a good start, the danger of being left behind in this league.
Yeah, I get that, but I'd still... We've had good starts, haven't we? I mean, look at us two last year doing podcasts in February, March, you know, April, May, June. We're buzzing.
By up to the end of June, we were still planning Old Trafford.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I had the open top bus plan ready. You know, it's, this is the thing, though. We start... I mean, we mentioned last season, that 2009 season, where we won the first 5 games when we had Richard Arne and Chris Thorman in the halves. I went Pete Tong after that, didn't it? I'm much more focused on the end of LFC. Yeah, don't get me wrong, it's nice to have a solid foundation in place at the start of the year, but I want to see us get better and better and better. I don't want to see us peak in February and March. I want to see us, you know, as I say, channel our performances and get longevity and continuity into them, because that's what we haven't seen at all. And again, this is where I go back to, oh, we've won a couple of cups, that mentality, yeah, it's all right. Oh, we've won a couple of games now, we've set the record straight, you've shut your critics up. No, you haven't. You don't shut your critics up until you finish, you know, in a playoff position in September. You don't shut your critics up from winning a couple of games at the start of the year. And I generally do believe that some people, especially some supporters, but some people within the club, and dare I say some players too, they have that mentality. Oh, we'll get stuffed at Warrington by a record margin, but it's all right, we won the game after. No, that's not all right. And we've got to get away from that. I think we have done. Again, I'll reiterate, the coaching appointment of Michael Shenton is absolutely brilliant. I love that. Yes. I also love the fact we've gone and poached someone from Warrington to help the youth out as well. That's great. You know, this Pete Riding book, I don't know him from Adam, but he's highly regarded, and that'll do for me. You know, he knows a lot more than rugby than your average Joe does. So, we'll, you know, we'll take that. Thank you very much. But, yeah, we've got to get away from that feeling of a, you know, jobs for the boys thing and move on as a club and actually have some ambition again and not just sit on a cup that we actually won 6 years ago this year now. And it's still fresh and it's still absolutely incredible and it was the best day of all our lives. But in August, it was 6 years ago. That's nearly 2,000 days. It's history. It's gone. I don't want to dine off that for the next 10 years. I want to move forward now. I don't want to dine off a round two masterclass against Salford where we looked absolutely amazing and Josh Reynolds looked the best player in the competition and Jake Connor arguably second, you know, equally so. I want to see us get a sequence of wins together and do that throughout the season. I'm not saying we're going to win all 25 games or whatever it is these days because that's not going to happen. But, you know, I want to see us continue to perform right throughout the year. And in September, we're still competing and we're still fighting. If it doesn't happen, so be it. But this is what I want to see in a Hull FC. I don't want to see us go down and throw the towel in and get absolutely, you know, mullered by a team like at Salford or at Wakefield or an absolute pointless game like at Wigan. I want us going down like we did in that semi-final. If we're going to get beat, that's how you get beat. I want to see us play vibrant rugby every single game. And if I get that, I mean, 9 times out of 10, the results will take care of themselves. But, you know, that's what I want to see this year. I don't want to see us just do 5 kicks and a bloody drive to the corner or, you know,
Let me counter. I agree. I agree completely, right? But let me counter what you're talking about, right? Because at the halfway point of last season, the one thing me and you were talking about was our fight and the fact that we seemed to have found it again and the fact that we weren't getting toweled up. You know, we said a couple of times, that game this time last year, Hull had lost by 40 points when we'd had a close defeat against St. Helens. And we were saying that, you know, we seem to have found our fight and me and you were both saying, you know, that can only come from your head coach. It can only come from Brett Hodgson. And then when the rot started to set in, we questioned attitude. And the attitude we questioned was senior players. Not the kids, but senior players. And in particular, the attitude of people like Fanua, who didn't look like he was going to be bothered, Sneed as a leader, Houghton as a senior pro, and Taylor as a senior pro. They were the people whose attitudes we were really seriously questioning.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the year, it cost the club a lot of money, but they got rid of Fanua, and it was the right thing to do. And at the end of the year, they were dead-eyed, cold fish ruthless, and got rid of a hero of the club in Sneed, because it was time to go. We've gone out and signed a really, really good halfback that's got something to prove. We've signed the big, rough-ass prop that we asked for. They've done everything we asked of them. And if the attitude was the problem, we've got a long way towards redressing that. Because we've signed a winner as a halfback. We've signed a prop that bleeds for his club. Absolutely bleeds for his club, sometimes to his own detriment, because he gets that white line fever and he can actually overstep the mark a little bit on the field. But I tell you what, as an opposing prop, I'll be looking off my shoulder every 5 minutes wondering where he was and when he was going to hit me next. And we haven't had that for years. We haven't had that for a long, long time.
Well, and that's since Scott Taylor's first year, arguably.
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, we will next year be better than we were last year. And last year, yeah, I know it ended badly, but last year we were better than we were the year before. It may not have shown it in the league table, but we were. We were, you know, when I think me and you said you can pinpoint the 10 minute period where our season ended, and it was in the second half against Rovers at the KC when Reynolds went off. When what's his name? Did his Achilles? You know, that was the point where we just went, ah, that's it. We've got no strength and depth now. That we've gone. We are gone. You know, a few nasty injuries, some horrible luck, and then some senior players that weren't putting in. That's what did us last year. Well, we've got rid of the senior players, and bad luck doesn't last forever. Honestly, I reckon we'll be better this year. I really do.
I hope you're right. I really do, obviously. But I agree with what you've just said in terms of we have addressed a lot of problems and problems that we're all screaming out for, but there's still a lot of problems at that club right now. We've still got Deadwood that when the contracts expire at the end of this year, we need to go, thank you for your service, off you pop, find a new club.
See you later.
But yeah, it's a tough one because I want to get optimistic and I want to feel what you're feeling right now and saying, oh yeah, we're going to be right up there. And if Luke Gayle clicks with Jake Connor, I mean, we saw what Jake Connor did what he did last year in an average team. That's the reality of it. A team, don't get me wrong, like you say, that crafted for every single inch on that pitch for the first half of the year, but he didn't do that in a blistering St Helens side or a Catalans team that were the two best in the competition. He did that in a side that ultimately finished, you know, eighth in the league. Imagine what they'll do in a side that's, you know, competing in the playoffs, and dare I say, top four. And if he clicks with Gayle, who knows? And let's say you get a run together in the summer and you approach September in form, anything can happen. And this is, again, I reiterate at the point that we've got to be bang at it, in the summer and going into the autumn. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, oh yeah, we've had a great start. Yeah, nice one. Don't do anything for us, does it?
No, it doesn't. No.
I want to get excited. I really do. But I think I'm very cautious now because we've been... See, this is the thing. The club have got it right this year, by the way. I haven't heard anything about top four. I haven't even heard the word silverware yet, which is absolutely fantastic. Because if I do, I think I will go into a meltdown. But this is what we hear. Barring up until this year, every year at Hull, we hear those words. And we hear how this season will be different, you know, with top four and silverware. And it's tiresome. It's tedious. And actually, it's embarrassing. Because it never happens. And then we look absolutely stupid. That has to stop. It looks like it has stopped. And I'm definitely measuring my expectation this year. If FC are a playoff side and our brand of rugby and our identity have changed from that boring side of just, you know, big bloke, 16 stone, who just plump it upfield and kick to the corner and bore you to death. And if we change that into a side, but I think we will become under Brett Hodgson, who likes to chance the arm, throw the ball around, show a bit of finesse, show a bit of flair, you know, a bit of poise.
Yeah.
And I still have that direction and obviously still have that endeavour when it's needed. But, you know, who reinvent themselves as that, you know, let's say that keyword identity, then I'm going to be absolutely buzzing with that. And I also look at Hull in this year and I think, right, who and where do I want to see our players playing? And I mentioned the Lovajua point earlier. If he hits the ground running and if he's going to be the hooker that we all want to see him become, then he's got to get the lion's share of that position. And if he don't, then we know there's a problem, don't we? Because that position needs urgent attention. I mean, we all know it. Attack starts from your nan. And if that ball isn't fizzing out and nailing the first receiver time and time again, your attack's already stuttering before you've even got going.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, we've got to get that right. But if we get that, and I say I'm hoping we will with your Gayles and your Jake Connors, and we've got a better attack, then that's going to appease most of the fans already. Because, you know, you speak to people in the street, you message them on social media, email, text, whatever. Most of the feedback I get is the fact that we are so dull and boring to watch. You think of the brand of rugby we played under Arthur Bunting in the 80s. I mean, this is your era, mate. I've got bloody VHS, bloody Betamax video player footage. That's all I can watch. But you think of the brand of rugby we played back then, win, lose or draw. That's what I want to see in Hull FC this year. I don't want to see us, you know, bore us all to death. I want to see us play some, you know, entertaining stuff. And I think, oh, Hull are playing on Saturday. People are going to think, oh, I want to be there. I don't want to be, you know, shopping or going out. I want to spend the money up.
You're right, and a big part of that kind of renewal at the end of the 70s and the beginning of the 80s wasn't just that we went out and signed the players. We went out and signed players that would do that, that would actually entertain. And because of that brand of rugby, we could maintain a massive squad. You know, I mean, there was no such thing as a salary cap back then, and thank God there wasn't, because we wouldn't have signed half the players we did. You know, we were signing players basically because we didn't want other teams to get them. Right. We had an A team that would have been a bloody handy first grade team for any other team in the league. We really did. And we, you're right, we were playing a really attractive brand of football. We really were. You know, there is a tendency, and I've said it before, there is a tendency to look back at that era, and the Brian Smith era as well, with a little bit of rose-coloured specs. You know, we didn't win every game that we played under Bunting. Yeah, we won some silverware, but, you know, the Yorkshire Cup wasn't that hard to win. We never won the Premiership. We won one cup, and we didn't win it at Wembley, and we won one championship in all the time that he was there. That's all. Look, some of the greatest players in the world at the time played for us. You know, Topless, Schofield, Sterling, Crooks, Skerritt, Charlie Stone, some of the, you know, Kemble, Lulai, Okoye, and O'Hara, some of the absolute greatest players in the world of rugby league played for us at that time, and that's what kept people coming through the door. But those days are gone. You know, the days have completely gone where you can go out and, with an open checkbook, and go around the world and sign who you want when you want. We can't do that anymore. But what you've got to do is you've got to do something like a St. Helens done, which is have a club ethos. And the club ethos of St. Helens is we win and we win pretty. And it brings people through the door. The more people go through the door, the better players they can afford. And it just regenerates itself. What we don't want to get into is what Bradford did, which was win at all costs, win ugly. People stopped going. And before you know it, rather than the juggernaut team that Bradford were winning everything, 5 years later, they were fighting against relegation. Then they went bankrupt, and now they've been languishing in the second division ever since. You know, with this massive white elephant of a ground. And, you know, John Keir, who, bless him, you know, should have been put out to pasture as a coach years and years and years ago. You know what I mean? How the mighty have fallen, really.
I get your point. I definitely see where you're coming from when you think, since the Super League playoffs were introduced in 1998, St. Helens have always been in them, every single year.
Yeah.
That's what we're now, 2022. That's a 24-year period. That's phenomenal.
But yeah, and as an exiled Pom, right? You know, who only sees the Sky games. I don't go to games anymore because I can't, because I can't afford to fly 20,000 kilometres or whatever for a game like I used to. But you know, it's if there's a game on and Hull aren't involved, I'll watch it occasionally. You know, but I'll tell you what, if St. Helens are on, I will always watch it. Because I know it's going to be a decent game. I know it's going to be an exciting game, a free-flowing game. I know they've got players that I like to watch. You know, and I should hate St. Helens because of the drubbing they've given to my team over the years. Probably more than any other team, I can look at St. Helens and go, God, I hate playing against you. You know, we've played against Wigan and we beat Wigan and we beat Wigan at Wembley. And, you know, everything, and you know, we've got that history with Wigan, we've got that history with Rovers, we've got that history with Leeds. You look at Saints and you go, oh, God, every time we play them, your head goes down, you think, bloody hell, no, not Saints, not today. You know, any other team you'd think we'd have a chance against, but Saints, bloody hell. And a lot of it is because they've just got that mythical kind of feel about them. You know, they're good, they win well, they've got that ethos around the team where they're winners. Like Wigan used to have in the late 80s, early 90s. They've got that kind of aura about them. And that's what we should aspire to. You know, we need to, you know, and look, to be honest, the moves that we've made, they look some way towards going towards that. We used to have that Bradford feel about us. And that's a Radford thing. And that was Radford trying to recreate what he had at Bradford in the 90s when he played there. Now you've got Hodgson. Hodgson was a member of that West Tigers team 2005 that were like the Harlem Globetrotters, and he was a massive part of that. That's his ethos. He's got rid of two big, rough-assed, identical twin wingers in Farimo and Fanua and replaced them with two thoroughbred horses. You know, it's a good start, and it's a start towards reframing what we look like to outsiders as a team. And when you're marketable and you start getting, you know, you got to remember, if you're from Leeds, you've got two choices. You support the soccer team or you support Leeds Rhinos, and that's about it, really, unless you're a weirdo and you go to Hunslow or somewhere. They're your choices. In Hull, you've got three choices. You can be a soccer supporter, or you can support Hull, or you can support Rovers. And when Rovers finished above Hull last year, and they've just signed someone like Lachlan Coote, and they're playing free-flowing rugby, and they're like the Harlem Globetrotters sometimes, if you're a kid in Hull, and you know you haven't got family that are pushing you down the black and white line, you'd seriously consider Rovers as the team to support, just because of the way they play that free, open rugby that they play. Now, you can play free, open rugby and finish last in the league, and Rovers have done that over the years. But when it clicks, it looks great. And that's what we've got to get back to. We've got to get back to winning and winning pretty. We've got to get that ethos around the club and that feeling around the club that we're the ones to watch. Because I reckon 2016, when we played Warrington at Wembley, the only people that were supporting Warrington that day in the rugby league fraternity were Warrington supporters and Rovers supporters. Everyone else, every neutral, wanted Hull to win that game because of the way we played. And because we were due it. Because we were due a win at Wembley. You know, every neutral wanted us to win. And that's what we've got to get back to. Because on last year's, well, late last year, you look at that team that took the field that didn't really seem to give a crap. Your neutrals are going, I don't really care about Hull. And then you fade into insecurity and obscurity in people's minds. And you become like a Wakefield or a Salford or a Huddersfield.
Like what's the point of them? Yeah.
Second thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you don't want that.
But, and then
we're
when the
sub, of the game.
Yeah, and when the decisions about sub play come to fruition, you're thinking, right, okay,
yep.
How are we going to spearhead this competition? Right, we need Catalans in there, we need St Helens in there, we need Wigan, Wire, Leeds, Hull. Yeah. Nah, I don't really care about Hull. They haven't done anything.
Well,
that
was the thing, right? 10 years ago, when they were talking, when they had licensing, right, and we were an A license, right, and they were talking about, you know, if they did shorten the league or they were restructuring the league, it would go Wigan, Saints, Leeds, Hull. We were one of the first players that we were one of the first teams that people thought of, because we had a great stadium, because we had success on the pitch, and because we were a really good organisation. We were an A licence. But if you did that same thing today, you'd go Wigan, Saints, Leeds, a team from Hull.
Yep.
You wouldn't say Hull FC anymore. You'd say a team from Hull.
Like they did at the turn of the millennium, late 90s. It was colder, wasn't it? It was Humberside, yeah. Colder.
Yeah.
Scary thoughts. Yeah, Cumbria.
You know, and we've got to get away from that. We've got to get that. We've got to get that feeling again where we're a team to watch, and that, you know, neutrals will watch, and other teams hate to play. So we've got to get to that point where if we get drawn out in the cup, and St Helens get drawn away to us, they're not going to go, brilliant, let's go to Hull. They're going to go, oh, Christ. And that's what we want. We want that. We want teams to fear us.
Yeah.
And fear the way we play. And it starts with home form.
Absolutely. And this is where we say about measured expectation again and realistic expectation. We're not saying that we want Hull to reinvent the attacking wheel, be that side that everyone fears and win Super League this year, because that ain't going to happen. Well, it's very unlikely that it'll happen. But what we want to see is build some foundations, change our identity into a team that plays that brand of rugby. If we do, we will definitely 100%, I will put my hands to the mast now, we will win more games than we lose playing that brand of rugby.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, because we've got the players to do it. We have speed now. We've got two blistering wingers. We've got a fullback who is as creative as anything in this competition. We've got a halfback who will bring that fullback on even more. You know, we've got some very good prop forwards. We've got Manu Mao, who finished the season last year like an absolute tank. It was unbelievable.
Yes.
If he picks
up
where he left off, then we've got an absolute diamond on the left edge. We've got an halfback as well who's going to put him through gaps.
Yes, exactly. And a winger that can finish off.
Yeah, exactly.
That, well.
You know, that left edge is,
you know,
brilliant.
There's a lot, mate, to be excited about. I really genuinely believe there is a lot to be excited about. We've got to be lucky. Got to be lucky with injuries and stuff, but I'm telling you, there's plenty to look at and go, do you know what? I think this year we can actually, we can shake a few people up.
Yeah, their injury point is good, and it's tedious, but it's a fact. If we get if we get three or four, and dare I say, if we get half a dozen at once, then we will struggle, especially if those are the half-back or the full-back or, you know, as I say, one of the wingers, one of the back rowers, and we're bringing in, you know, fringe team, first-teamers or, you know, young players or whatever, and we are going to struggle. And I don't think Super League, with the schedules that we've seen because of COVID, it has become something of a survival of the fittest. I'm not going to take any credit away from St. Helens. I mean, come on, we've just praised them for the past 10 or so minutes and what a club they are and how we all want to be them. But the fact is they were the fittest, and obviously they've done that through their training methods and they've earned the right to be called the fittest. But they were very fortunate with injuries. They didn't have season-ending injuries to like key players like Johnny Lomax or Lachlan Coote or Alex Walmsley. Yeah. You know, and obviously they've won three Super Leagues on the back of having those players in form and firing. James Roby's another one. What is he now? Nearly 40, no air, but he's still absolutely unbelievable. So, that obviously that's the challenge. But we've got, I will say that word again. Really, we've got to be realistic. We've got to manage our expectation. I don't think we can play down the importance of that enough. But like I say, this year, if we do get that style of rugby, if we are much more entertaining to watch than we have been, you know, the dross that we've seen over the past 2-3 years, then I'll be content with that, and I'm confident that that will give us a playoff position. I mean, that could be sixth, it could be fifth, it could be fourth. Dare I say, it could even be third. But if that's where we are, if we're fifth or we're sixth and we play a playoff game and see what happens, I mean, that's progress, isn't it, based on this year? I mean, like, even you just said, a while back, 2020, we were one game away from making the Super League Grand Final, but the side didn't reflect that. You know, the goalposts were moved a couple of times, the competition was an absolute farce.
100%. We were a better team last year than the team that was one game away from Old Trafford. And boy, would that have papered over the cracks.
Oh, absolutely. It would have done. Yeah, it would have done massively. But to some, you'll never get that through.
Coach now.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd have had Lasters head coach now. We would.
Yeah, exactly. We would, yeah. And we won't be making progress. It's as simple as that, because it's just an extension of Radford. Yeah, he'll have a few new ideas and... But it won't be doing what Bradshaw's trying to do now. And it's still not everyone's cup of tea, is Bradshaw. He'll have a point to prove, because obviously a lot of Wolf fans demand instant success. But
I mean, he tells the truth. And he doesn't respect people's reputation.
No, he doesn't.
You know, I think when we first got him, I said to you, that's the end for Fanua, didn't I?
Yeah.
Because Fanua had played his first ever friendly game for the West Tigers. He'd scored two tries. He was man of the match. And the very next day, he turned up late to training. And Hodgson dropped him for 3 weeks.
Did the same last year, didn't he?
Yeah. Right? And Hodgson just went, you don't do that. You're a professional, you don't do that. You come back to this club when you're ready to play. And he sorted his head out, and he ended up having a decent run in the first grade at West Tigers until he did his foot. And then West Tigers went, we want rid of him. And we put our hand up and signed him. We shouldn't have. Soon as Hodgson was announced as Hull coach, I bet you Fanua went, well, that's me finished, because the bloke doesn't like me. But it's not about that. It's not about whether he likes you. If you're putting it in and you're performing on the pitch, he'll pick you. Doesn't matter whether he likes you or not, he'll pick you if he knows it's good for the team. But Fanua, he knew it wasn't good for the team, and he got rid of him quickly. He's no respecter of people's reputation and past. Same with Snead. Yep, great. Hero of Wembley, but that was what? 6 years ago now? Mm. What have you done since?
Yeah, exactly.
No thanks. Off you go. We'll get someone else.
Adam Swift is a good example. He was given the number 21 shirt at the start of last year, but he forced his way in and was our best winger by a mile.
Absolutely. Because he was playing a player that was in form and a player that wanted to do it. You know? A lot of people don't like Cam Scott. But I tell you what, he stood up last year when he's had to, you know, because, you know, you lose an international class player like Griffin, and you throw Cam Scott in there, and he didn't let us down. There's a couple of issues that wasn't his fault, you know, like when he was left 3-on-1 on a wing, you know, when, you know, people going, oh, you know, he should have done better than that. You can't, you know, it's the players inside him that didn't do their job that left him exposed like that. He's done really, really well, and that is because someone like Hodgson has seen something in him and gone, this is what I want you to do, and you do it my way, and you do it this way, and you will blossom. And he will. You know, wasn't he a Great Britain under-18s captain or something, Cam Scott? Or
England Academy,
he's a good England Academy captain. He's a good player, mate. And he's one of them that this is his year. He'll really kick on this year, I think, Cam Scott.
Well, that's another good point to make, because you look at Jordan Lane as well, getting a starting shirt for the first time in his career, number 13.
Yep.
Again, Joe Kitt is obviously coming back from injury, but you want to see those type of players kick on and reach the next level. Yeah, you're right. When Cam Scott comes in, he's got to kick on that. This is the thing. Our young players have been built up in the past, and I was very guilty for this. I listened to all that spin when I had the old Daily Mail job 5-6 years ago, and, oh, yeah, we've got all these players that are going to be great. We've got an halfback school, you know, next best thing's right here on our doorstep. Didn't pan out
Harry
like that.
Tyson
Wilson. Yeah, well, in fact, from that era, the two players that remain at the club are Jordan Lane, who no one even spoke of because he had an ACL injury, and then a back injury, and obviously Brad Fash, who was obviously still there now. But the rest of them are gone.
Yeah.
They're playing at York, they're playing at Hull Rugby Union, they're playing in the Army, they're, you know, that's the reality
of it. It's a good point, actually. It's a good point when you're saying about, you know, Swift and stuff, giving his chance and running with it. You look at the players that he did that with last year, whether it was they were given a chance because we had injuries or they were given a chance because he looked at them and went, no, you're absolutely right for it. And the big one for me is Satter. The difference between what Hodgson got out of Chris Satter and what Radford got out of Radford stroke last got out of Chris Satter was chalk and cheese.
Mm.
You give the bloke a starting jersey and you say, go out there and boss that game. And did he?
Absolutely.
There's your difference.
Yeah.
There's your difference. You know, you've got Farima on big money and you've got Fanua on big money. You've got Swift coming in as a third choice, fourth choice winger, whatever, going out there and making a play for it. And basically, as long as he stays injury free, his performances demand him in the team. Good on Hodgson, for, you know, because previous Hull coaches would go, oh yeah, but this bloke's on loads of money, I have to pay him. You know, previous Hull coaches would have caved to that. You know, we've paid all this money for this guy from overseas, we can't have to pay him. And we've lost good players because we had to play people that would come over on big money. You know, I mean, the case in point being Josh Hodgson.
Yeah.
You know, he was probably one of the best hookers of his generation and has absolutely bossed it in the NRL and left because he couldn't get a place in the whole team.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that we've got Michael Shenton, who was born and bred in Castleford, West Yorkshire, as is Gareth Ellis, and we've got a bloke, you know, 10,000 kilometres away, and Brett Hodgson, who's come to the club, and they will see different perspectives. They see something in people and they'll pick the right players, and like you said, we've seen that with Satter, we've seen it with Swift. I've also seen it in Jordan Lane and that little positional move as well. I mean, to be fair to Lee Radford, he noticed it as well. He started playing him at loose forward, and you're thinking, that's a decent middle there. You know, you're thinking, Jordan Lane's always been known as this edge, you know, this line running edge back rower, but you put him in the middle and arguably looks even better. So, yeah, this is what I like about Hodgson now. He's definitely bringing the best out of certain individuals. What he's got to do now is he's got to bring the best out of the side, and obviously that transpires with all the players on the same hymn sheet. They've got to listen to the head coach and back him, and we've got to do that as supporters as well, because we all want the same thing. We all want Hull to be much more attractive to watch. You know, we all want Hull to be successful, but we understand there's a road there to be successful again, and that's the problem. We've got to accept where we are. That's a big thing.
I think that's exactly right. You've got to understand where we actually stand in the pecking order. But you look at it and you think to yourself, well, I can't really see that he's put much of a foot wrong. I really can't. He's made some really big calls. He's obviously got the owner on side because the owner's put his hand in his pocket and paid off a player who we put big store in coming back and was the face of the club, you know.
Mm.
You got a bloke with a mullet and a gold tooth, for God's sake. He's the face of the club. And, you know, he's you know, the choices he made with Swift and with Satai and with Lane and with bringing, you know, like, taking Shaw out of the equation and making Connor our first choice fullback when Connor had been sitting in the centres and occasionally playing at six. You know, getting rid of Snead now. You know, he's made some massive, massive calls in his first year as a head coach. You know, we have legitimately got some real quality in that team. What we need now is a bit of luck, and we need a coach that's not going to go back into his, you know, shrink back into his shell. We need a coach that's still going to make those difficult decisions and put himself out there and risk it. And if we can do that, you know, fourth, fifth's possible, I think.
Yeah, you're right. We have got some very good players, and we've got a coach who's willing to make the right decisions for the beneficiary of the club. And, you know, he hasn't got an ego or anything like that. It's the club that comes first, and you've got to love that. You can really admire that. He's made some decisions that his previous employer would not have done. I couldn't see Lee Radford doing that. I really couldn't, because he's a very loyal bloke, sometimes to his detriment. You know, he stuck behind a group of players that let him down, and that ultimately led to him leaving the club himself. Because he backed those players and they continuously let him down. Just turned up thinking, it doesn't matter. I mean, he gets shit by 50, 60 points and it was embarrassing. And he stood by that and he took all the flak from it. And sometimes it wasn't his fault. I'm not saying he was faultless.
That was both his strength and his weakness, wasn't it? We had big shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the type of bloke he is, though. He actually is a joy to be around whenever he... You know, I had the luxury of interviewing him for a few years in the media, and he was absolutely brilliant. He's always, you know, he's worth his weight in gold when it comes to a line or so. He's absolutely, he's brilliant.
Yeah, he's good copy.
Yeah, but he's actually a really good human being as well. Really, you know, really, really good, just fun to be around. And I think that definitely rubbed off sometimes. I think whereas you got Hodgson, who's, you know, like you say, no respecter of reputations, he wants to come in and change things, and it is his way or there's the door. And that's what it's got to be. You've got to back that head coach, and you've got to listen and accept the way he does things and get behind him. And as you say, we have got some very good players, and there's always potential with Hull. We use that word all the time because, let's face it, we are a big club. You know, we've got a fanatical set of supporters that will back us, you know, wherever we go, whether it's bloody New South Wales in bloody Australia, or whether it's to Lee or bloody Wigan on a Thursday night, we do it because it's what we do. It's in the blood. You know, I think that passion is shared, certainly in the CEO. I mean, a lot of people have joined this, let's all, you know, criticise James Clark bandwagon, but I tell you what, he works his absolute bloody ass off for this club.
Yeah, he does. Man.
Literally, 18-hour days sometimes. And, he might not get everything right. Who does in a job? We all make mistakes. That's why they're called mistakes. But, you know, he's got the club at heart, and I think a lot of people at Hull FC do. You know, the youth department, you know, Gareth Ellis, I think he bleeds black and white now because he's a club legend, isn't he, Gareth Ellis? Hodgson will come in. I think, again, Hodgson's coming as an outsider who has nothing to do with LSC. He's from bloody Sydney, isn't he? And he obviously played at Huddersfield, played at Warrington, played all his NRL career at West Tigers. But he's come in and he's absolutely embedded into everything Hull FC right now. I can guarantee
that. He's been bitten by the bug.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But every reserve game, every academy game, apart from when they clash, which again is an absolute farce, but it's where we are as a sport and as a competition. But yeah, when you look at all that, there's no reason why we can't be knocking on the door of, you know, sixth place, fifth place, or dare even say higher of the Super League playoffs. But again, I'll just reiterate to finish off, I just want to see the best of Hull FC. I don't want to see it in March. I want to see it continuously across the season. We've got to be bang at it in August and September and not fall by the wayside like we have done, four of the past 5 years now. But yeah, we'll look forward to it as always. I'm sure we'll have some highs, we'll have some lows. We'll be waxing lyrical at times, we'll be praising, we'll be complimentary, and then we'll probably hit meltdown mode once or twice because that's how it is. It's a roller coaster, it always has been, it always will be.
Yeah, strap yourselves in. It's going to be a long season no matter what happens, but we'll be there with you as a sounding board and as sometimes as an echo chamber, I suppose, but we'll be there and we'll try and make sense of it all.
Yeah, and in my case, definitely not the voice of reason. But yeah, we'll leave that there for first episode of the year. Thanks for your time, mate, and go on, you all.
Anytime, mate.